Hi, I'm Luke Dennis, the Development Director at WYSO. We are happy we can deliver these programs to you, people who listen on the web, and we rely on you to help us pay for this service. So at our website, wyso.org, click Support This Station and help keep these services coming. And thank you.
Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my delight to welcome back to the program today Sue Grafton. Hello, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks. It's been too long, Sue. I think the first time we had you on the show must have been 17 or 18 years ago. I think you were in Yellow Springs for the Antioch Writers Workshop.
I am sure that's correct. I love that conference. I first went to the Antioch Writers Conference in 1960, so I'm an old hand at it.
And if memory serves, I think that you're an old friend of Sandy Love, is
that? Yes, she was a high school classmate.
There you go. And then I think I had you on more recently, but it's probably been a dozen years. And in the meantime, you've just kept putting out these wonderful books in this series, and we've gotten clear up to the letter W is for Wasted.
Yes. Took me a while to come up with the title for that because there are many good W words. I'm getting to be an expert on these things. You know, there was warrant and wanted and witness and weapon. But when I finally fashioned the story, I thought wasted was the nicest way to capture what I was talking about.
Let's pretend for a second that there's actually one person out there listening who has never heard of Sue Grafton or Kinsey Millhone or this series. How would you explain it to them?
I write about a small-town private eye, a female. The books are set in the late 80s. She's single. She has one dress. She cuts her hair with a pair of nail scissors. She eats junk food. She jogs. And she is hell-bent on justice and seeing that the bad guy gets his. So it is her adventures, her cases that I write about, and how she acquires work and how she tackles it and how she puts it to bed at the end of the story.
And this is the 23rd book in the series.
And yes, sir. And since I am trying not to repeat myself, I do not want to write the same book twice. So the books are getting much, much harder because I'm always looking at them from the perspective of the books that have come before. I think it's very easy to get into a pattern, you know, something that feels familiar and comfortable, and you can fool yourself into thinking you have a good new idea when it's really just a rehash of something you did before. So very vigilant about that.
And this one takes place in 1988, and a dozen years ago. The last time I interviewed you, I think the same year I interviewed a guy named Ed McBain, or at least that was his pen name, and he said, you know, in this genre, he says, the first thing you start out with is, he says, you got to have at least one body, and you start us off with at least one, don't you?
Yes, I do, and then two in this case. And but, you know, that's a funny rule that I don't think applies too much.
Uh-huh.
The editors are always saying get the body as close to the front of the book as possible, but I think it's more important to care about the victim. So often I don't open with the murder. It's like you need context. You need a sense of who we're talking about so that life matters to you. You know, there are many styles, of course, and some people like to start with a bang. I'd like to start at a quieter place.
And in this one, our two unfortunate remains are those of a private investigator, kind of a shady operator, and a very mysterious homeless man.
Yes. Those were the two storylines I started with. And for a long time, I did not think they connected. I knew Kinsey was involved in both of the stories, but I didn't see that the two intersected. And at a certain point, I thought, oh, my God, I understand how this works. you know, I'm kind of slow off the mark here. But then it was great fun to watch the two come together and to understand how each paid off. So one of my goals on this one was to talk some about Kinsey's father's side of the family. In J is for Judgment, she finds out she's always thought she was an orphan, and she's been kind of proud of that. She likes to see herself as a loner. So in J is for Judgment, when she realizes there's a whole family whose last name is Kinsey, she's a bit put out and certainly doesn't want to be part of any warm family gathering. And so since that book, I've been working my way toward her reconciliation with these people. But one of my readers wrote me a note and said, well, she's so frosted with her mother's side of the family. What about her daddy's side? And I went, that's right. So then the trick was to see if I could tell that story without repeating the emotional rise and fall of her relationship with her mother's side of the family. So it's taking me a long time to do these things.
Sue Grafton joins us. Her new one is W is for Wasted. And in this one, I always try to figure out where you got the word for your letter. And I guess in this one, it comes to me as the wasted potential of the homeless.
Exactly. And wasted in the sense of alcoholism, too, which is another undercurrent here. I was a little uneasy about writing about the homeless, because particularly in Santa Barbara, which I write about, though I call it Santa Teresa, there's a big divide in public opinion. There are many organizations in town that are devoted to making sure the homeless have hot meals and shelter and medical care and moving them into housing and finding jobs for them. And there's another segment of the population that just gets fed up, because businessmen in particular, you have homeless people sleeping in doorways and urinating on your signage. And there's a sense of intolerance for that kind of interference with business. So I tried to present a very fair-minded, you know, a balanced view. And I think I've pulled that off. You know, I don't get into the politics of these things. That doesn't interest me. Psychology, yes.
Well, I know just from reading the paper on a regular basis that the homeless issue in Santa Barbara has been a hot button for a long time. And being homeless is a terrible thing. I've never personally experienced it. I cannot imagine what it must be like. But if I was homeless, I would probably want to be on the beach in Santa Barbara.
Exactly. You'd come to my house. I know you would. Well, you know, one of the points I think that's made in this is nowhere is it written that everybody wants to be in four walls with a roof over their heads. There are some people who don't care to live that way. They don't want the burden. They don't want the financial responsibility. It is not a crime to be homeless. It's just if there are people who wish they had been incorporated in the system and want back in, those are the people I think we're most concerned about. But some people like sleeping on the beach, you know? The homeless I've known, and truly, there was a fellow named Beach Bob. I still walk along the beach. And what's interesting, and I bet you don't realize this, many of them are book readers. They sit out there on the grass in the sunshine looking at the Pacific Ocean reading paperback novels. So I always thought that was sort of interesting, that sense of literacy.
Some of them are probably a lot more well-read than your typical person living in a house.
Exactly.
Sue Grafton joins us. Her new one is W is for Wasted. I don't want to give away any spoilers, but I don't think it's too much to say that at the very beginning, this homeless man who is found dead has Kinsey's name and phone number written down in his pocket.
And the coroner calls her, thinking she must know him. So she goes down to the morgue, looks at this guy, and realizes she has no idea who he is. But she decides to kind of start nosing around, figuring if he had a problem, maybe some of his cronies know what his issue was. And little by little, she gets caught up with some friends of his. And we work our way through the story from there.
I love this decade of the 80s. And looking at your numerology and your alphabetology, I can see where you're still going to be able to be in the 80s when you write the last three books.
I will. I'm thinking it'll be New Year's Eve 1989. So the narrative year at the end of this series will be 1990. I don't think Kinsey's going to turn 40. 39's a good year. And even if she had her 40th birthday, that's good too. What I think is unfair is that when I started this series, she was 32 and I was 42. By the end, she's currently 38. I'm 73. My hair has turned gray. In the meantime, she's still jogging along, having a good time, eating junk food.
Yes, I like how she describes putting the salt on it.
Ah,
that's so 80s.
I know, yeah. Absolutely. Well, the world was so innocent back then. If you look, no cell phones, no internet, you know, no Game Boys, no Xboxes, and no texting. People were actually forced to have conversations and relate to one another eye to eye. And from her perspective, in terms of her process investigating, she can't get on Google and look people up. She has to do her sleuthing the old-fashioned way, which is better from the point of view of storytelling. And it kind of makes it fun for the audience or the reader to remember what it was like.
I love that. It drives me crazy when I'm watching a modern detective show and they're talking on their cell phone or they're looking at their smartphone. That really bugs me.
I know. It's like, hey, because the truth is, it's when it comes to even police investigations, there has to be an intelligence at work, somebody gathering information and interpreting and putting the pieces together, which a machine so far cannot do. Technology has been wonderful in terms of providing evidence, but there is always a detective who is working to put the pieces of the puzzle in place, and that's part of what Kinsey does in all these books.
Kinsey is very determined when it comes to her job. She's fairly relentless, but she does have these distractions. She has had boyfriends. She has had lovers, and we're reminded now and then of who these individuals were, and several of them turn up in this book.
Exactly. Well, and my readership is divided. Some people want her to get married and settle down and have babies, and the rest of the readers are going, oh, my God, that would be so dreadful. Because she's very iconoclastic, and I don't want to write about her romances. You know, she does connect occasionally, but the point of the books is law and order and crime and punishment. And sometimes romance is just a distraction from the point of the books.
This poor man, this homeless man who is found dead at the beginning, he has some friends who are also homeless, and they become significant characters in the story.
Yeah, and I worked hard on those because I thought, you know, I didn't want to stereotype, and I wanted representational, you know, there is a black guy and a homeless white guy who wears dreadlocks, and Pearl, who's overweight and sassy and outrageous. And so part of what I was talking about is the bond. Kinsey becomes attached to these people, and whether she likes it or not, her fate and their fate are kind of woven together. So it's a good experience for her and kind of fun from my perspective. I got to go to the homeless shelter there in Santa Barbara and look at what was going on.
Sue Grafton joins us. Her latest is W is for Wasted. And as we speak, the book isn't out yet, but as you're listening to this, it will be just out. And I imagine you're gearing up for some book publicity. What's that like? Do you get some extra rest? Do you take lots of extra vitamins? What do you do to prepare?
Well, right now I'm on a walking program, and I have a little Fitbit at my waist, so it keeps track of how many steps I walk, how many miles, how many flights of stairs, how many calories. And then I get this weekly total, and I get these imaginary badges, and I'm such a simpleton. I get really excited about that. So I'm already trying to drive my numbers up, but when I'm on tour, I just cannot stop and exercise. So I'm trying to bank some miles and some thousands of steps so that I don't get too far behind. But that's been fun. Exercise for me, walking, which is not an expensive occupation in terms of good health, that just is how I blow off steam. Writing is sedentary. I sit up here at my desk for hours on end, and I like to get out in the weather and see what the world is smelling like and looking like. So I do miss that when I'm on tour.
And a day like today in Southwest Ohio, as we're speaking, is absolutely magnificent September weather. I imagine in Louisville you're getting some of the same.
Exactly. We've had a big line of thunderstorms that were wonderful, and those have passed. And in the wake of them comes this lovely, soft weather that's not too hot and not too cold. It's great.
You still got a little bit of that Kentucky in your voice, too.
Well, and when I come back here, I spend part of the year here in Kentucky. I always feel it coming back. In fact, I'm sure I have no accent. You must have a hearing issue. but I'm surrounded by Kentucky accents, and it is just fun to be back on my own turf. So I'm probably a stone's throw away from you in Yellow Springs.
That's true. We had a guy from Kentucky on the other day. He definitely still had his Kentucky accent, some guy named Ricky Skaggs. Getting a lot of Kentucky writers on here. I need to get Bobby Ann Mason back on the show.
Yes, and Barbara Kingsolver and Wendell Berry. I mean, there are a lot of us out there.
Well, I don't know what it is. It must be the water down there, huh?
It's the limestone, I'm sure. It's what makes good horses. Same thing.
Okay. I'm reluctant to say too much about what happens in this story, W is for Wasted, because there's so many good surprises, and it's too easy to give things away. If you were to just give sort of a basic plot line without spoiling it, what would you say happens?
I would, I suppose, focus on Kinsey's involvement with the homeless, not from any do-gooder point of view, but trying to figure out how this man died and how the second fellow, there is an unscrupulous private investigator who shot to death within range of this homeless man. And at first it does not look like those two stories connect, but they in fact do. And part of it, too, is her investigation into her father's side of the family, which begins to play out as she looks into these two murders. So it all comes back around, you know, and what you see, of course, is her landlord, Henry Pitts, and Rosie, who runs the tavern down the street where she has dinner, and Henry's brother, William. So there are familiar characters that come back, and a few new ones that we haven't met before.
And fortunately, even though you've killed off this shady private eye right at the beginning of the story, he's already dead. We have these wonderful flashbacks where we get to experience what a total sleazeball he was.
I know, and I love him. I thought he was so wonderful. He just amused me because he's completely financially irresponsible and cheats at every possible moment. And yet there's something about him. And I think when you see him in his death throes, there's something poignant, you know, to me. You've come to care about him, even though he's cutting corners and cheating everybody he knows. He's kind of dear, in my opinion.
Well, this schlub is saving up money for that big trip for their 40th wedding anniversary,
right.
And it's just sort of pathetic.
I know. Yeah, so yeah, my villains are always my favorite characters. There was a gal named Solana Rojas in Tears for Trespass, and she was incredible. Because she was just so wicked. And yet, when you looked at the world from her point of view, she's kind of righteous about herself. And that amused me no end.
So when you get inside the head of the villain and you try to create that character, what's that like for you?
Well, if I'm lucky, what happens, and this happened with Solana Rojas, I thought, well, I'll just write a little bit from her point of view so I can see how it looks through her eyes. Well, she'd been waiting for me all her life. She stepped onto stage, and every time I got to a chapter that dealt with her, she was pushing me out of the way so she could explain the world as through the eyes of Solana Rojas. And it was much the same with Pete Walensky, the unscrupulous private investigator. I'd tap into his life, and he'd just be in the middle of everything. And so that gave him a way to tell his part of the story. Otherwise, if everything is filtered through Kinsey Millhone's IQ and mental process, which many of the early books were only told from her point of view, but at a certain point, I realized how liberating it was to make a hologram so that the story has greater dimension than just that flat aspect of one character filtering all the information.
Ah. Sue Grafton has joined us. Her new one is W is for Wasted. And I don't want to forget one of my other favorite characters. I love the sleazeball private eye, but I think my other favorite character is a cat.
I know. Is he Grant? I swore I would never write about a cat because I have cats. I'm crazy about cats. And a cat will turn you into a blithering idiot. You know, you can't, you talk baby talk to him. So I thought, and Kinsey, even over the course of these books, has said, I'm not going to get a cat, you know, because I don't want to turn into one of those people. And I used to worry because she's on the road a lot. And I thought, if I give her a cat, then instead of chasing bad guys, the reader's going to be thinking, don't forget to feed the cat, you know. So then it occurred to me with this book that if Henry had the cat, she could get all the benefits without having to take him to the vet when she was supposed to be solving crime. So it was a sort of perfect compromise.
Nice. Okay, I'm looking at this. It's W is for Wasted. So according to my second grade education, we've got, what, an X, a Y, and a Z left.
Yes.
The X, you're going to be pretty limited on that one, aren't you?
Yes.
X
yes,
is for xylophones. X is for Xerxes.
It's got to be xenophobe or xenophobia, which at least suggests a motive in that it's a hatred of foreigners.
Oh.
I have some other options, but they're exotic, you know. So I'm thinking, we'll see. I'm on the track of it. I'm hunting down that story even as we speak. And I'm sure by the time I get back from the tour, when I'm brain dead and exhausted and probably have picked up the flu, I'll lie in a fevered state and hope that book comes to me.
So that's still in the gestation process, that,
yes.
That next one.
I have done research. I think I know the subject. And again, I have these two story fragments, and they are currently in conflict. I'm thinking, well, if I tell this story, how am I going to tell that story? And I know they're both connect somehow. They might not be as intimately linked as the two stories in W is for Wasted. But most of the time, I just have to get out of my own way and let my shadow side work out these issues.
Do dreams help?
Yes, they do, sometimes. Often it's the emotional content of a dream. A nightmare is a wonderful thing. You wake up and you're afraid and you think, oh, what does this feel like? As a writer, I'm thinking, where does the fear manifest itself? You know, the whole sense of heightened awareness, and that's good stuff. So I track it down. I make notes. I'll hop out of bed and go make notes about what's been going on in my sleep.
Otherwise, we forget sometimes, don't we?
Yeah.
I'm sure some of your many devoted readers are probably having nightmares about this series ending.
Well, it's been taking me 2 years per book. So with my grade school arithmetic, 2 times 3 is 6. So that means when I get to the end of Z is for Zero, I'll be close to 80. So when people ask me what I'm going to do, I get kind of cranky. I don't have to do anything. I will have proved my point.
Uh-huh.
All my friends are retired and traveling and playing golf and going on cruises, and I'm sitting at my machine ripping my hair out by the roots trying to figure out how these stories work. So, and yet, by the same token, I can't imagine my life without writing. I can't imagine my life without Kinsey Millhone, who runs me ragged. I mean, she rules my life. So I don't think she'll let me off the hook just because we finished Z's for Zero.
Well, realistically, when I look from my view as a reader, it's hard for me to imagine you just putting your pen up and saying, okay, that's it. I see so many writers that just can't do that. I think of somebody like James Lee Burke, who I think will be in the saddle, you know, with his pen.
Yeah, I think so. Well, if you're born to write, that's what you do. But I think a lot of people who even come to it from a different perspective, as journeyman writers, it gives so much meaning and structure to life that to give that up, I don't know what's left, you know. You go to get your hair cut and go to the grocery store. That's not life. Huh. So writing is what keeps me anchored at what I get up for in the morning and what I go to bed for at night. So I can't imagine doing anything else.
And for those of us who read closely, we did pick up a couple of little tributes on your part. There's a couple of books being read in this book. One is a Dick Francis. I think the other was a Robert Parker.
Yes, indeed. Well, and Kinsey reads Lynn Dayton as well, and she reads Elmore Leonard, whom we just lost to the mystery world.
Mm.
So where possible, I tip my hat to writers I admire. And a lot of those old guys, Donald Westlake, Tony Hillerman, I mean, the world is just a lesser place for having lost those guys. And so it's fun to sort of, you know, remind ourselves who's out there and all the hard work that was done by those people.
And some of them were so prolific, like Westlake, that they had a whole set of books under other names.
Yes, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And Parker had several series. You know, he was very versatile. He'd move in and out and try other forms. And Elmore Leonard started as a Western writer. So what I like about him, they never got into the politics. They never got into whining and being PC and feeling put upon. So they're just guys who did a good job and didn't complain about it. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think the only political reference in this book is when an elderly woman is asked to say who the president is.
Well, that's right. She's a little bit twiggy, and she's still thinking it's Nixon, as I remember.
Right. Well, Sue, it's always a pleasure.
Good talking to you. Now, you only get 3 more chances at this, Vic.
Oh,
so don't ignore me.
I won't. We'll be on the track. We'll be talking to your publicist for each successive one until we get to Z.
All right. That'll be a conversation to end all conversations.
Oh, I should say. The book is W is for Wasted, and my guest has been Sue Grafton. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you. It's been great fun.
For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Tune in next week when James McBride returns to the program. His new novel is The Good Lord Bird, and it's the story of Henry Little Onion Shackelford. And this is a wonderful novel coming up in the Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.